The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Rebecca Curran. This week saw tests to find out the environmental situation following the gas leak, a call for energy firms to offer a fairer deal to customers, and concerns that a wind farm near a northeast town could threaten the future of the Granite City Rally. Fish caught near the North Sea gas leak are being given the all clear by the Scottish Government. Marine Scotland researchers tested seven species of fish from around Total's Elgin rig and say there's no contamination. Rural Affairs Secretary Richard Lockhead says it shows the environmental impact of the leak is minimal so far.
Thankfully, we have the reassuring results that there's no hint whatsoever of any contamination of the fish samples. And we await the results from the water and sediment samples we've taken as well, which will be available later this week.
Meanwhile, the potential impact on the industry is also being assessed. Credit ratings agency Fitch says the crisis could force new regulations, which could cripple future investment. Here's analyst Geoffrey Woodruff. Geoffrey, if you want to start by telling us a little bit about this report that Fitch Ratings has produced.
Yeah, we published a report today talking about the potential regulatory fallout from the gas leak in the North Sea. The European Commission had put forward some proposals in October 2011 to perhaps tighten offshore drilling requirements in EU waters, not only in the North Sea, but also in the Mediterranean. And we felt that this latest accident increases the likelihood that they would increase efforts to increase regulations or increase licensing requirements. And what we looked at specifically from a credit rating standpoint that was most relevant for companies that we assign credit ratings to is the potential financial impact of that. And there's some specific language in their proposal that said companies would need to prove that they have the financial capacity to deal with any environmental damage that they may cause. And there's various studies that have been published by the European Commission putting numbers around these potential accident claims, and they give a baseline amount that they think might be a cost for a cleanup, and then they go through how their various proposals could reduce that risk. But there's still an amount left over at the end that potentially any company would have to meet, and just by reading through their reports, our calculations come to around 10 billion euros, which means in theory, any company would need to potentially prove that they have those financial resources to hand before they would be allowed to apply for drilling permits to do offshore drilling, either in the North Sea or in the Med.
Wow, I mean, 10 billion euros, that's quite a figure. So I imagine, really, that kind of indicates that perhaps people might be deterred. I mean, is that what you think?
Well, we think that it'll be a challenge for companies, and obviously they're still in the negotiation phase, and it still has to go through European Parliament, and of course, EU member states, I think, might have some potential objections, and the UK being a main one. And even though Norway is technically not part of the European Union, I think they might have something to say about it as well. So it's not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination, but the point of the report is to highlight the fact that this was already moving forward even before the accident in the North Sea, and there was lots of argument from industry that this is unnecessary because our procedures are safer, and now that this accident has happened, our point is I think it only emboldens the European regulators to perhaps push forward with these proposals in a way that they might not have done before the accident.
Now, I mean, regardless of what happens regulatory-wise, I mean, how do you think that this incident has affected investors' confidence in the industry anyway?
It was interesting to see sort of the initial reaction for investors to the accident. And then I think once they realized perhaps it wasn't as severe, things had calmed down. But there's a chart on the front page of our report that basically shows that the reaction is more severe now after the accident in the Gulf of Mexico than it had been before. So if you take a look at the equity price reaction, just as an example, for Exxon Valdez or for Piper Alpha for Occidental Petroleum, almost no reaction whatsoever. And then we had the BP accident, and then obviously BP's share sold off. Chevron has had some problems in Brazil. Their share price sold off, and then Total was the most severe to sell off immediately. So the point being, it seems now that investors are much more gun-shy and are quick to sell first and will worry about the potential impact later. And if it's not as bad as they think, then they'll buy it back. But the initial reaction is to sell. And it seems with each accident that the sell response seems to be more severe than the last time. And that was evidenced by the 10% decrease in Total's share price.
Absolutely. I mean, what kind of conclusions did you draw from the report?
Well, I think what we basically concluded is that only companies that have really robust financial profiles might be able to meet this regulatory requirement if it's implemented as it's currently proposed, and smaller companies might have a harder time doing it. But as we said in the report, even large companies might have difficulty sort of taking 10 billion euros and parking it on the shelf to be left there indefinitely to meet some regulatory requirement. And if so, that would be what we call block cash, which is cash that's unavailable for other purposes, such as capital expenditures or debt servicing. And that obviously is going to have an impact on their credit profiles.
I mean, you mentioned smaller companies there. In the most recent round of drilling licenses in the North Sea, a lot of them seem to be directed for those smaller companies, you know, perhaps smaller pockets of oil and gas up for grabs. I mean, obviously it would be a shame if those smaller companies now, you know, didn't have the opportunity because they didn't have, you know, the financial backing.
Sure,
for it.
Sure. Yeah, this is where it starts to become a political question, and that's where industry lobbyists and politicians will have to find some common ground between needing to satisfy a constituency that wants tighter safety regulations and an industry that needs to create jobs and bring in tax revenue. And so that's, as I say in our report, that's the gray area where we can't really see where things might pan out, and that's why there's still rounds of negotiations to go through. But we say in there that we think some form of increased regulation will come in some form or another as a result of this latest accident.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, delivering asset integrity solutions to the global energy industry.
Also this week, experts were playing down safety concerns about offshore helicopters. The European Aviation Safety Agency issued an emergency directive after the brakes failed on a Super Puma aircraft landing on a North Sea rig. The news came less than a week after the third anniversary of the crash of Flight 85N, which killed 16 men. Aviation writer Jim Ferguson told Energy Week there doesn't seem to be too much to worry about.
Well, basically, the problem, of course, is it's a holiday weekend. Getting information is very difficult. I've been able to speak to one guy who said airworthiness directives are very unwelcome indeed, but they are carried out. The fact that they have been carried out suggests that it was a simple fault. Obviously, we'll have to wait until next week to discover exactly what happened. But my understanding is the workforce are not at all concerned about this one, but obviously they're looking over their shoulders all the time, and this is very understandable after the Bond 85 November accident.
And can it be said that, you know, as always in these situations, that if something like this has actually been flagged up, in a way it's a good thing because they're paying attention?
You've got it in one. The Norwegians have obviously signalled it to Eurocopter and EASA. This is why this thing's come down. You don't want helicopters rolling towards deck edges or worse still, off deck edges. There's enough going on in the North Sea with the Elgin platform problem. And I think this is going to concentrate a few minds, but we'll have to wait until probably Tuesday to get any real detail, although the remedial measures have been put in place and there shouldn't be a recurrence.
A quarter of UK households have been billed incorrectly by their energy company within the last 2 years. That's according to research by price comparison site Uswitch, which says the average amount owed due to billing blunders is £152. Anne Robinson from the site says there are simple steps that can be taken.
I think it's a great first step, but quite frankly, it doesn't go far enough. Let me just unpick it a bit. What the government is proposing is the energy companies tell customers what is the best deal to meet their needs. And then if the customer wants to, they can ring up and find the very best deal. Now, quite frankly, right now, the best deal to meet customers' needs is the cheapest deal, because most of us are struggling to pay our energy bills. So I think what the energy companies should be doing is telling people about the cheapest deal available and then give them a tariff which they think may meet their needs. Because one of the best deals available is online dual fuel paid by direct debit. The fact that you're not online at the moment doesn't mean to say that you won't go online, or find someone who could go online for you to get that cheapest price.
A lot of people seem to be thinking it's a scandal that there is a cheaper deal out there, that 70% of us are paying more than we need to with our own supplier. And if there is a cheaper deal, why are we just not switched on to it? Why do we have to get a letter and decide that actually we do want to pay less for our power?
I think there is huge problems about this market. I think most people don't understand it. The deals are really complicated. The companies don't make it easy for people to get themselves on the best deal. And unfortunately, you know, it's 15% or less of us are now switching on a regular basis. There's no real spur to competition, and that's what we need.
What about demystifying the market then, and to make it more straightforward? Because even if you do go on to a comparison website, a switch website like your own, you've got to put in so much information, know so much about your tariff and your usage. Is there a way that we can just make it all much simpler?
Well, I don't think it's that complicated to use a price comparison site. Try it, you'll find out.
Well, to be honest, though, I have done. I have switched, I did find it at the time difficult to work out what I was using, when I was using it.
Let me tell you something. One of the things that you do have now is that you're supposed to get an annual statement from your company. Now, that annual statement gives you the information that you need right there and then to put in. So that's been an improvement probably since you used it. But the biggest complication is this multiplicity of tariffs. I mean, despite the simplifications that have gone on, we've still got nearly 200 tariffs. Now, the regulator, Ofgem, is proposing some massive simplifications. They are to be welcomed. The other thing that's necessary is helping people to understand what energy they're using. How many people understand the bills? And if you don't understand your bills, how on earth can you shop around?
100 quid a year saving on this doesn't seem like a lot of money when we know, comparing different companies, there can be a £300
Absolutely.
Differential.
That's why I think it's really important that, A, first of all, the companies tell us what is the cheapest tariff so we can decide for ourselves. And secondly, we use that and compare the whole market, because there are going to be, for most of us, better deals out there. And we do need to save money on our energy, because we're rapidly getting to a situation where we can't afford the energy we need.
The government has reached a deal with energy companies that it hopes will save customers money. They'll now receive a letter once a year stating the most efficient, cheapest tariff on offer for their household. People must also be allowed to switch to it if they want to. Audrey Gallagher, Director of Energy at Consumer Focus, says the move is welcome, but customers should be proactive in finding the best deals.
Well, this is a welcome move by the industry that the government's negotiated, because for the first time, people are going to hopefully find themselves on the best possible deal. So while we have a competitive market, I think it's always been a real issue that consumers of an essential service have been paying more than they ought to be. So it's a good welcome first step, but I think probably a lot more needs to be done by industry.
But you think it's going to give consumers more control over who they get their energy from and how much they pay for it?
So the new deal that's been struck is that energy companies will tell their customers what the best deal whenever they contact them, and they'll also proactively once a year write out to their customers and let them know what the best tariff is. Also, if you're on a fixed price deal, when you come at the end of that, you should be getting put on the company's best product rather than just a standard product. So this is a good move, but I would caution consumers to make sure that there's not actually a better deal to be had by switching suppliers. So I would hope that people don't become complacent. Of course, it's great that for the first time companies will have them on a decent price, but that shouldn't mean that you don't go out and engage in the market to see if there's something better for you where you could save more money.
Does something more need to change? Is this the full package now, or could it go further?
Well, I think a mail shot out to people telling them that they can save money, I don't think it's going to work. This has to be part of a much wider engagement strategy to get people really thinking about their energy and helping them save money. Not just about how you pay for your energy or who your supplier is, but becoming much more energy efficient. So I'd see this as a first step, and what we would hope would be a much wider package of measures, because let's face it, people don't really have a lot of faith in energy companies. Trust is really at an all-time low. And there's a lot that the industry themselves have to do to ensure that consumers are, you know, can trust them, want to shop around, want to get engaged in this market.
But it's positive from your point of view, and this seems to be the government actually finally getting behind consumers.
Well, I want to see how it works. It's a good first step. It's good that automatically people will get a cheaper price. But we need to make sure that the costs involved with sending out these letters are actually worth it, that people do act on them. So I'll be anxious to see how we get on with this, and that the benefits are stacking up against the costs of doing this, because ultimately anything the industry does, we end up paying for.
The company behind a northeast wind farm says it's happy to work with organisers of the Granite City Rally to safeguard the event's future. Concerns had been raised the turbine project at Fetteresso Forest near Stonehaven could close off part of the track used for the race. But Alex Woodward from Fred Olsen Renewables says the firm will cooperate to find a solution.
We will try and work with SCS to just ensure it can continue to happen moving forward. Fred Olsen Renewables' main priority is focusing on the safety of a wind farm site through all the development stages. But as I said, we'll work with Forestry Commission Scotland to try and make sure the rally can continue.
Ian Shields is a president of the Aberdeen and District Motor Club and clerk of the course for this year's rally. He's also positive about the situation.
You know, I took over this year after the negotiations for this year's event had taken place. Yes, there will be restrictions for us, but no, it's nothing we can't live with.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Rebecca Kern.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.